I'm Chris Foster.
Good afternoon, Jo.
Now, you are a gentleman of many talents.
That's what I've been told.
But they started a long... No, I don't mean that rudely. That sounds bad. They didn't start a long time ago, but you've been in the showbiz world, shall we say, for a few years now.
I certainly have, yeah. Well, originally from about the age of 13, I joined the county amateurs at the age of 13, purely because my music teacher roped all the boys in the school choir into their production of Oliver at the Theatre Royal in Lincoln, and I got the bug from there on.
So you were in the choir at school then?
Yeah, I was.
So you're a recognised singer?
I don't know that my school choir would have been a recognised choir.
Okay, but from there, what did you do next?
Well, at 15, I went into the army as a boy soldier, and I was in the army till I was 21, and my trade was actually a cook. I was in catering. I cooked at the White Hart for a year or two, and then I went on to work for British Rail. British Rail catering, I hasten to add, but into civil engineering. But while I was employed by the railway, I met a chap who's used to play in bands. Mm-hmm. He was a guitarist, and he found out that I could sing, and so we formed a band. And from that, I went on from that, singing around all the clubs through the 80s. I sang with the jazz trio for a little while. I had a little session with a big band, and then I got into acting. The bug got me. I went back to the Amdrams. I saw an advert in the paper for Oliver again in 1984, 85, sometime around there. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for people in the chorus, and I went and auditioned and got in, sang in the chorus, and I got the bug there. That was the county amateurs. Then I joined the Lincoln amateurs, and then the Gilbert and Sullivan followed on. I had quite a lot of leading roles with those companies, and that triggered me then to start my own theatre company, Lincoln Actors, and I produced Little Shop of Horrors at the Theatre Royal, and a couple of mini tours of John Gobber's Bouncers. After that, a little bit more singing, mm-hmm. a little bit more cabaret work and what have you, and then an opportunity came up for me to go down to London and do theatre studies for a year and a half. Took one of the lads.
Can I just ask, how old were you at this stage?
Oh, at this stage, when I went down to London, I was in my 40s.
Wow.
So I went down as a mature student.
Yeah.
I took one of the lads down with me who was in my theatre company, Tony. Now, Tony's done really well for himself. He stayed down in London. He's got a place down there now, and he's directing. He's directing hundreds of productions now. And I think he's working for the Chapter House Theatre Company in Lincoln. He does a bit mm-hmm. of directing for them. So he's done really well. I came back. I got in a little bit of a rut from London, having lived virtually in the West End. Both of us were living just at the back of Oxford Street, which was amazing, yeah. Amazing for seeing shows. But I came home and bumped into a chap who was doing a drama degree, somebody else mm-hmm. I knew. And he said, oh, you'd enjoy this. So I went and had an interview, and within a week I was signed up at Bishop Grosstess. And I did a degree there for 3 years. Came out with a 2-1, which prompted me to get back into doing some theatre work. The main thrust of my thesis at the end of my degree was puppetry and puppetry in education. And my final performance, which you have to put on, you have to do a final performance. Yeah. My final performance was based around puppetry, one of the Oscar Wilde stories, The Selfish Giant. And somebody saw that and asked me if I would go into a school and do the production. Well, I didn't actually go into the school and do that production, but I went into a school and started showing the kids how to make puppets from simple objects that they could get around the house. And off the back of that, another teacher saw me and asked if I would go and do some workshops for early language learners. And that took me all over. I went all over the country with that, and I went and did quite a number of big conferences. And
so early language learners for children, basically.
Yeah, for primary. But I also did some work for Sure Start and a number of World Book Days, which were very good. And I should have been going into a school with some of the students to do 2 or 3 weeks' work. But it was curtailed. We did one session and then COVID struck.
Oh, it has a lot to answer for.
And that course that I was going to be working with has now ended.
Oh, that's sad. So where are you now then?
So where am I now? Well, I heard about the Leicester Comedy Festival and I'd done a little bit of stand-up comedy in London. You know, there were so many pubs there with cellars that had been converted to stand-up comedy places. Mm-hmm. And I did a couple of 10-minute spots at these places. And then I saw this advert for Leicester Comedy Festival, and a guy was offering a 10-week stand-up comedy course. So I got in touch with him, and I thought, well, I don't want to travel every Monday night for 10 weeks to Leicester. So I got in touch with him. I said, well, look, if I can get a dozen people to do a course in Lincoln, would you come over? To which he agreed.
Yeah.
And it was on that course that I met my current writing partner, Stuart Wilde. And we hit it off straight away. He very similar sense of humour to me. And we ended up writing a lot of the gags for everybody and sorting everything out. And then off the back of that, me and him went on then to do stand-up comedy courses for a while.
Is stand-up comedy quite easy?
Yes and no. It's like
do you have to be a certain type of person?
No, I think anybody could do stand-up comedy. It's about having the confidence to get up and do it, and that's what the stand-up comedy courses are about, building a person's confidence. You know, you work towards putting on a evening. You know, everybody gets on the stage. I mean, even after all these years, I still get nerves. Everybody does. But when you stood up in front of all your friends there, and the only thing I couldn't contend with is going round, because we went and did a few gigs round the Midlands, Stuart and I, and I didn't really get any hecklers. But you know, I'm not fast enough to think of something witty to say back.
Yeah.
I think of things in the car on the way home.
When it's too late. Yeah.
When it's too late. But Stuart could handle all of that sort of thing, and he could improvise, and he did quite a lot, and he ended up emceeing a lot of comedy gigs and everything. Yeah.
So you said you work with Stuart now, your writing partner.
Yeah, well, we've written, over the last few years, we've written at least two 6-episode comedy series for the radio, which we tried a couple of times to get somebody interested, but it's very, very difficult nowadays to get anybody to commission anything unless it either comes through a literary agent or through, say, the BBC's writer's room, mm-hmm. or an independent company. And once again, most of them are looking for names and whatever. So unless you've done something of merit outside that's caught the attention, it's very difficult to get anything.
Or unless
done.
You know today's biggest star, oh, and you can say to them, this is really good, I've got this part for you, take that to your producers.
Well, I think everybody has to understand, you know, that it's a business.
Yeah.
People are in the business, they're investing money in it, and they want to make a profit from it. So they're looking for something that's going to sustain.
Yeah.
But we've written stuff for the TV. In fact, my previous writing partner, Colin, and I used to send off comedy sketches through the 80s to the BBC. We had stuff on Jimmy Cricket and a few other things, but we weren't that prolific. It was just a bit of fun for us.
Yeah.
But now I'm writing a book, as you know. I'm also a part of the Green Room Open Word Fellowship, which I'm really enjoying. Getting to meet a lot of new people. But as I say, I'm writing a book. I've got a blog, and I'm working on a comedy musical. I've got about 20 songs written so far.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing lacking now is somebody with keyboard skills. So if there's anybody out there in the environs who is a whiz with the old keyboard and can compose and arrange, I'd love to meet them. And especially if they've got plenty of time on their hands.
I'm sure there'll be somebody, Chris. When you say comedy musical, that kind of intrigues me, I think.
Well, it's based on The Hunchback of Notre Dame. I call it Rocky Modo. But it's the style of the songs is so eclectic, you know, and that's why I need somebody with a good sense of humour to work with me.
I'm liking the sound of that Rocky Modo.
It's set in the time of The Hunchback of Notre Dame, but yep. it's got very surreal elements to it.
As most comedies do.
There's a little bit of rap in there and, you know.
Can you write rap?
But we'll see.
Okay.
I'm sure the audience will let me know if it ever gets on the stage.
Well, I'm not going to ask for an excerpt of that.
No.
Yeah, I'll wait until you've completed it and then you can maybe come in. You know, we could maybe have it on the radio and do it all for you.
We'll see.
But I am going to ask you to read some of your work, if that's all right.
Oh, some of the stuff that I do at the green room.
If that's okay.
I've got a couple of pieces here. Of course, you know that some of my poetry is a little bit dark and...
A little bit risque. It's all right. My producer is there with his bleep. It's fine.
I'm sure he'll edit the... I'm sure he'll edit out. This is called Slug. Norman ate a little bug. He found it underneath the rug. His mother told him not to do it. Defiant boy just had to chew it. He ate an ant, a ladybird, a fly ascending from a turd. His father simply had to shrug as Norman bit down on a slug. He ate a tick from off his cat, several fleas from off a rat. According to his brother Craig, Norman died, bubonic plague.
There's a shock. I'd clap, but I'm still quite flabbergasted, I think. I'd like to say that Norman is not my son at all. He's not even anywhere close. All my children are very good and don't eat things like that. Well, not while I'm around. They don't anyway.
Do you want another while we're here? This is called Pastry Girl. Pastry Girl went out to play, but on that sad and fateful day, she forgot her mother's words to stay away from flocks of birds. While bending down to feed a duck, Pastry Girl ran out of luck. She fell into that languid lake. For Pastry Girl, a big mistake. But for that duck and swan and teal, she became a tasty meal.
Oh. I'd like to say I enjoyed those, but I have, of course, heard you do other writing.
You have, actually, yeah.
And yeah. Which I enjoyed very much, which is, unfortunately, a bit too BP to put on the air. Because we would end up with more beeps than we would words. So, Chris Foster, you have been amazing.
Thank you.
Your literary works are incredible, even if they are quite macabre, some of them.
Well, the public will have to wait for the book to come out.
Yes, I have heard excerpts of Thompson's Lost Plimsoll, which, again, I would love to play on air. I think we'd end up with more bleeps than we would words.
Well, not every passage is full of expletives.
No, I don't think the
in
one
fact,
that
most
I
of
heard...
the book isn't, just the bit that you heard.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, I don't think that was full of that many.
No, not really, no.
You just like the dramatic, don't you, really? So, just going back to the drama, as a mature student, do you think you were taken seriously?
Yeah, I was actually, yeah. I imagined when I went to university, I thought I was going to go into one of those situations where there'd be all these young students who were, you know, full of joys of spring and intelligent and I'd be in these great conversations and everything like that. But what I actually ended up being in some ways was a bit of a father figure. Mm-hmm. You know, once they'd got problems, you know, they would come and speak to me or ask me to sit down with them and go over the work with them and what have you, you know, and that was an element of it that I actually did enjoy. I really did, you know. Because I did think I would struggle to engage with
the younger generation.
Ones. Yeah,
and
yeah.
You didn't.
But no, I didn't. No, and at the end, it was my 50th birthday actually, just prior to graduation, and they threw me a surprise party. It was absolutely amazing. Mm. I got some beautiful little gifts, and some of the sentiments in the card that they gave me were absolutely wonderful. So, yeah, a good 3 years.
Yeah. Would you do it again?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily do the 3 years again, but I would have loved to have done gone on and done a master's degree. But yeah. Bishop Grosstest, as you probably know, is very much aimed at teacher training. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't necessarily an area that I wanted to go in. I mean, I did speak to the people that were running the master's degree, and they felt that they could work some element of like the puppeteering education into it, but not enough to sustain a whole master's. Okay. And I would have had to go heavily into education, and it wasn't an area that I felt that I was going to go in at that time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
where are the puppets now?
Where are the puppets?
Yeah,
most of them are in a couple of suitcases.
So they're in kind of puppet retirement.
Puppet limbo.
Okay, puppet limbo. That sounds so much nicer than puppet retirement.
It does, because there's always going to be opportunities for me to, use
them up again. Yeah. Because I assume a drama degree would have helped, wouldn't it, with your puppets?
Well, the drama degree didn't have a great emphasis on necessarily on acting and performing, because it was like a community arts degree. It was drama in the community rather than full-on drama.
Okay.
But it was more towards pushing you towards doing... we did a lot of, like, street theatre and that's sort of community, mm-hmm. community theatre. But, yeah.
Hence the puppets.
Well, hence the puppets, yeah. I mean, what it was, I wanted to put on... Each of us had to put on a final performance, and I wanted to do something... because I love Oscar Wilde's work, and I wanted to do something with that. And really putting on something like The Selfish Giant, I had to consider the element of the giant and the small boy who, if you know the story, is actually Christ.
Right.
And he has the stigmata in his hands. The giant sees it. It's a powerful story.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to do it because I have an actor friend who's 6'8", 6'9", and he's very broad, built big. So he played the giant for me. And then I made a puppet that's very similar in the style to what's called a tabletop puppet in Japan. It's called a bunraku. Mm-hmm. And it needs two or three of you to articulate it. But I also used a back screen, and I was able to use some of the students to do shadow puppetry at the same time. So it's like a combination of all sorts of things, acting and puppetry.
It's a community thing, really is community in that case. Yeah.
You have to use, as a third year student then, you had to use the first year students as part of your production.
Right.
So I used them to do the puppetry and play the elements of like wind and air and what have you.
Excellent. Chris, you have been an absolute pleasure to talk to.
And thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
And I have loved hearing your macabre little poems. Or do you call them poems or...?
Odes.
Odes.
Well, I had the intention, Joe, of writing a book called The Misfortunes of Others. So I think they all slot into that theme.
It did sound a bit like it. I'm just wondering now, where did you get your inspiration, or where did your characters come from?
I don't know, Joe. I get these bursts of inspiration. I've got so many half-started projects. That's the problem. I get really into something.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to write a play about the First War for years, and I've got quite a lot of dialogue and quite a lot of scenes, but I'm not applying myself to it in order to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also got an idea for a one-man play. It's called The Rise and Fall of Lenny Price. That's the title. But it's about an old East End gangster type who's coming towards the end of his life. You see him getting ready for something, preparing. But he plays himself as a child. He plays himself as a youth. He plays the prison officer. He plays the police officer. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So, and it's just like voices coming in over. So it's a bit of a tour de force for somebody. But once again, that's another project that's got to be finished.
Yeah.
But with the poetry, I don't know what it was. I just sat down one day. I had an idea in my head. And then the stuff just kept flowing. I couldn't write them fast enough.
Chris, on that note, I really do feel that I have to say thank you very much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.